just step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 635. I am Lisa Sheps. I will be joined at some point this morning by Miss Nicole Shiro. You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at KOOP.org. Please don't go away. Stay right where you are.
Show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
It was something he said. Something he said, his words built a wall.
It is Wednesday, September 22nd, 2021. On the show today, we have Shrewd Productions and their show Lady Macbeth and her friend Megan. And of course, it is our fall membership drive, so get out those wallets and get ready to call in. And of course, Nicole and myself and Bob Daly are going to have lively discussions. The world of theater in New York, Chicago, Austin, and Boston, Massachusetts. Don't go away. Nicole, you're here.
I'm here.
Cool. We've been having some trouble in the beginning of the shows these days getting things going. And as I mentioned in the intro, this is our spring membership drive. And I want to welcome to the microphone right here in the studio with me, Mr. Bob Daly of Civil Rights and Wrongs, 6 o'clock on Tuesdays on KOOP. Bob Daly, we're here on together in person.
I know. We've got to stop meeting like this. You know?
Never. We can never stop meeting like this.
You know, last night was my first time back on the air here in a year and a half.
Oh, my God.
I was a nervous wreck.
I can imagine.
But we're back live again, and it's pretty exciting. It sure beats doing Zoom calls at my desk at home.
You know? It makes a big difference, yeah. And the energy level here. But before we sit and chit and chat, let's talk about what we're doing here today.
Yes, we're in our membership drive. It's our fall membership drive. And if you don't remember anything else, 512-472-5667 is the number that you need to call right now to show your support for Co-op
Right.
Community Radio.
So remember, 512-472-567 or koop.org. I would like to thank Kim Simpson for another amazing International Folk Bazaar. It's always so
Kim
good.
Kim always rocks it. I love it.
He actually doesn't rock it. He internationalizes it.
And the International Folk Bazaar is it.
And during his hour, he actually had a couple of callers.
Oh, okay.
One was Stefan, and thank you so much for your pledge, Stefan. And we had an anonymous caller as well.
I actually know that person, anonymous.
Anne.
So, Nicole, I don't know if you heard the song that we played at the beginning of the show. I'm guessing you didn't. Did you hear it?
I did not. It was in station land.
Right. And Bob, you heard it, but you probably weren't listening to it because we were running around chasing our tails here. It was a song that is called "The Wall in My Head," and it's from a show called. This is actually from the West End show called "Everybody Loves Jamie," which is now a movie, I believe, on the flicks of net.
It is. It had a special screening at the Eglet earlier this year, and then it came out in theaters on the 10th. It's in selective theaters, and then now it's also on the Netflix.
Yep. So this is Jonathan Butterell is the director of this, and it's streaming on Amazon, excuse me, not Netflix.
Oh, sorry, and it's about right. I didn't know that.
It's about a young man named Jamie whose dream is to be a drag queen. And this is in the northern parts of England, working class society, and it has all the tropes that you might expect. It's got the loving, caring mother, and it's got the not so loving and not so caring father. But it all talks about them, and the reviews for the film have been pretty much positive, not raves, but probably good, but this is based on, and I did not know this, and you probably did, it's based on a 2011 documentary called Jamie, Drag Queen at 16.
Yes, and they kept all the same creatives, Jonathan Buttrell and the other two that did the music, and
Tom McRae and Dan Gillespie.
Thank you. Those three creators of the original musical all are back on this film doing their thing,
yeah.
Which is so exciting to have all the creatives from original musical to be working on the film.
So my plan was to have watched this film prior to today's show, but I failed. I did see the opening number, which was charming. This actor is really charming as well. So everybody's talking about Jamie.
They sure are.
So let's see what else we want to talk about today. Our time is going to be crazy because of what is the membership drive. But Come From Away is back. It opened I don't even know what to call it. It's back on Broadway starting yesterday. And I guess Offstage and On the Air is going to turn in. We seem to be talking about Come From Away every single week.
Hmm. You know why, though? It's so good. And I'm just going to say it again because I always say it. We need to get the real Kevin T on.
Okay.
He's in Austin.
Can I just say that? This is the last time you can say that because we talk about Coming From Away
week.
So much. We hear that a lot. But I was actually, I'm not a big Facebook person. Bob, are you a Facebook person?
I have zero presence on Facebook.
But I went on Facebook and my friend, my very dear friend, Allie Shore, there's a picture of her in front, and she lives in Hawaii, but in front of the theater, and she saw Come From Away last night. That's the end of the story. but it is back on stage. Speaking of the West End, Back to the Future, the musical, has...
That cray-cray going on over there.
It's cray-cray. Well, it opened and it's gotten reviews, in the review in The Guardian. So we've talked about Back to the Future, and it always seems to be about the car. And guess what the review says?
The car is everything.
It's all about the car. Everything else is just okay.
How do they do that on the stage? That's what I want to know.
Well, interestingly, that's what they talk about. And they do it with screens using video. And the video design is by Finn Ross. They do a lot of fast-moving lighting design by Tim Lucan. And they're just using whatever theatrical tricks we have. But evidently, they do it. And they talk about how do you make a car look like it's going 88 miles an hour,
right?
And then fly. Well, flying is easy. That's done with strings.
Spoiler alert, there is a little bit of footage and interviews all on this on their social media pages. I watched a really great thing on the Twitter about it the other day. And
I love the Twitter.
It was fascinating.
So this production is directed by John Rando. The book is by Bob Gale. Music and lyrics are by Alan Silvestri and Glenn Ballard. And this stars a lot of people, but in Doc Brown is Roger Bart, who, if you don't know him by name, you know him by visuals. You've seen him in everything.
Yeah.
And he sat out a couple nights of this, and I believe they canceled a performance because he had COVID. He tested positive for COVID.
So, there was a lot more than that. So he got COVID, and his understudy went on. Then they canceled another night. Then they canceled 4 days. And it's not because the cast had COVID. Everyone came down with food poisoning.
Oh, my God.
I told them not to eat the sushi.
So I was like, oh, well, that's not good. I mean, when you have no understudy tech crew, you have to cancel the show. So it was closed for 4 days. And I think they're now back up again. Everybody speculated the whole cast had COVID, but it was just Bart, and then it was the food poisoning.
Wow, that's great. You're a font of information. Along the same lines, the road company of Hamilton in Atlanta had to cancel a performance last week because of COVID-19. One of their people came down with COVID, and then they could not get the rest of the cast tested fast enough to open. So evidently the protocol is somebody gets COVID, then everybody else gets tested, and if everybody's okay, they go on with the show.
Right. So it wasn't, it wasn't actually due to COVID. It was due to not having testing and abilities to test.
Well, but tangentially it was COVID because this one guy came down with COVID and they couldn't test. But they are, they cancel a performance and they're adding a performance to make up for it. That's nice of them.
Yeah, they added it right away. It was in the Fox Theater in Atlanta.
Yep. You just know everything, Nicole. Well, let's take a break and talk about what's happening here at Co-op right now in terms of membership drive. I'm talking to you, my loyal and beautiful, and I know you all are, audience. I'm not hearing the phones ringing.
She's in New Jersey.
Yeah, I'm not either.
So
I
she can
I
do
one
it.
A
you can
ago.
Do it.
512-472-5667.
And now, let me look at
I
my...
I should note that's a 20-ounce Yeti tumbler if you were trying to figure out what size.
Somebody's got the web page open.
Somebody knows her OZs. I'm... Anybody here watch the Emmys?
I got a little bit of it. I saw the Conan and I couldn't stop laughing.
Conan was on fire.
He was having more fun than everyone else, man.
Because he has nothing to lose because he's retiring.
Conan.
He was, yeah. So when the president of the Emmy Awards was up speaking, Conan was standing at attention and saluting the entire time. And it really put the man off his game, which was really sort of fun. But I watched them. There weren't a lot of surprises. But one of the things I'm kind of happy about, and I don't know whether the rest of my listeners, and I don't know how you feel, Bob, mm-hmm. but Nicole, I think you and I have talked about this. The cast and the show of Hamilton was up for a slew of Emmys. And I do not think that they should have been even nominated. They shouldn't have been qualified for an Emmy because it was really a recording of a stage performance.
I felt the same way. And I think we had this whole conversation, will it be, will it not?
We did. But I was very scared when the first set of awards for featured actress and Renee Elise Goldsberry and Philippa Sue were nominated. I was like, I felt so terrible. I was saying, please don't win. Please don't win. Please don't win. Because I wanted, you know, other people to win. I didn't think Hamilton needed a slew of awards. They did take the first prize for best variety feature or something like that.
I was about to say they got one. And Lisa, you know, I don't want to, I kind of agree with you on it. And I think I was saying that before this even happened.
I think you were.
Yeah.
Is that it? Is that it? Oh, not yet. We're going to get there, Bob. Bob's anxious to thank some listeners.
Oh,
but we're gonna still talk about theater for just like a couple of minutes more.
You know why? Because that's the power of love.
It's the power of love. Anyway, I did enjoy the ceremony itself, the Emmy ceremony. It was done, evidently, it looked like it was done in a tent. Because
Seth Rogen was on fire, too.
Seth Rogen was on fire. And because Ted Lasso won award after award after award, they had a live party in London, which it must have been like 4 a.m. or 3 a.m. there. And they kept cutting to London for these, and then they would do their speeches from there. But I thought the ceremony itself was pretty okay.
It was one of the better ones we've had in a long time for award ceremonies. So.
Yep.
I don't know. I guess we'll find out how good they're going when we roll into the Tonys this weekend.
Oh, my God. I decided consciously not to talk about the Tonys today. So we're just going to pretend they don't exist. Did you know that there
You're
is...
You're on fire yourself.
They're developing a new musical called Mr. Saturday Night with one Billy Crystal. I never saw the movie Mr. Saturday Night.
So I saw the movie Mr. Saturday Night, and it's so funny because when that came up in the briefing, I was like, oh, Billy Crystal. And then I was like, oh, yeah, it is the same thing.
Yep.
I was like, no. And now I'm kind of like, oh, so... Well, tomorrow I maybe know again. What do I know?
It's true. It's being done at Barrington Stage Company in the Berkshires, who was one of the two first shows to have audiences during the pandemic. Music by JRB, Jason Robert Brown.
I was about to say, is that Jason Robert Brown?
Right?
I love that you're JRB.
Well, yeah, we call him. Yeah, I call him Jace most of the time when he's over at my house. And lyrics are by Amanda Green, and the book is by the original screenwriters, Crystal Lowell Ganz and Balibo Mandel. And the just talked about John Rando will be directing it. Boy,
oh, that's a great little heavy hitting there group.
Yeah. And Mr. Saturday Night is about the rise and fall of comedian Buddy Young Jr. And Billy Crystal directed the movie. I did not realize that. It was his debut.
I didn't realize he directed it also.
Yeah. Well, now you know. Now you know.
The things you learn on offstage and on the air.
Okay. One last thing. We're going to listen to a little music and some stuff from our sponsors, and we're going to come back and talk about Membership Drive and thank those people that need to be thanked. But we did lose a couple of people this week. And one was an actor who I had not heard of called Peter Palmer.
Great name.
Heard of him?
No,
Bob?
But it's rolls off the tongue.
Bob Daly, who's been working at this station for quite a while, probably one of the golden children of this station, hasn't figured out that shaking his head on the radio does not work. but Peter Palmer died. He was 90, but he starred in Little Abner on Broadway, and he did two other Broadway shows as well.
Okay.
Do you know what those are, or?
I can't off the top of my head. I think one was, he was replacement in the other two, and I can't remember what they were. But he was also on the Ed Sullivan Show, and he sang the song Granada, if that makes a difference. Guess not.
Yeah, I don't know.
The other person that I'm sure people will be familiar with is Jane Powell.
Oh, yeah.
She passed away.
Yeah.
A classic.
Yeah. Well, he was 90, and she was 92, so they had a
full,
great run.
Life.
She's mostly known for doing movie musicals, and oddly enough, when the musical heyday died, her career took a big slide at that point. But she's best known for Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. Mm. But she also did, actually the last film she did for MGM was The Girl Most Likely in 1958, my birth year. And the
magical year for a magical year.
Yeah. And then, so on Broadway, her Broadway debut was in 1974. I was a junior in high school. And at that time in 1974, I was playing Toto in The Wizard of Oz.
oh, I love it.
I'm trying to imagine this.
There's pictures. I have pictures. She replaced Debbie Reynolds in this title character in Irene. She was also in touring productions of My Fair Lady, The Sound of Music, and Carousel. So rest in peace. Rest in power,
like
as they say.
Classics.
Yeah. So let's take a little break and let's listen to said Debbie Reynolds singing from Irene. And we'll be right back.
Irene. You made me love you. I didn't want to do it.
That's true.
I didn't want to do it.
Gosh. Again, 512-472-5667. Let's get back to theater talk, shall we?
Yes.
So let's talk about, if I can get I'm having trouble getting this computer to actually turn on. Here it goes. But we talked about this before. Jagged Little Pill. Which when it was in the regions in its previews, it had a distinctly non-binary character. And then when it opened up on Broadway, the character was still there, but they were no longer non-binary. And then there was a big kerfuffle. We talked about this months ago. Where,
big kerfuffle.
Yeah, so where the non-binary and socially just people of the world were very angry at that. And then the star, Laura Patton, who played that role, tweeted out that she never said that they were non-binary. And the producers said that it was never a non-binary character. But shame on them, because there's this thing called video and Twitter, and everybody knew that they were a non-binary character, and they lied. And so they came out just recently with a big article. Lauren Patton is part of this. And evidently I heard, I don't know that this is true, it may be, that she's now part of the producing people of this thing. But she erased her tweets where she had purposely mentioned...
Because nothing ever lives on the internet forever.
No, no. But there was an very big statement from Vivek Tiwari, Arvind Ethan David, and Eva Price, who are the three lead producers, apologizing for what they said. And then Patton also said she's profoundly sorry for the harm that she caused, and she wants to provide clarity and insight. And then they went on to say how much they didn't realize that non-binary people could look at this representation on stage in a positive light. And they're sorry that they took that away from them and then made their comments irrelevant in their minds. And now they're making amends and saying that they're going to, they hired a whole new dramaturgical staff, and they were going to fill them with non-binary people of color, non-binary and people of color, and LGBT people to try to stave this off in the future, and also their future casting. And so they've laid out a series of steps that they're going to take to make up for this. But I can't get beyond the lies.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I imagine they're going to fill their new shows with lots of mea culpas, huh?
Well, I guess, you know, I truly don't get it. Yeah. I don't get it at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's all
No. I agree.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we have nothing else to say about that. So let's, before we introduce our guests, let's take a little bit more time to talk about what's going on here at the station.
What are we doing here?
Yeah. Oh, I forgot. We have the T-shirt
co-op,
says
koop.org
or 512-472-5667. We're going to go to our interview right now. And I sat down with Evan McQuaid and Shannon Grounds of Shrewds Productions. They're doing a show called Lady Macbeth and Her Friend Megan, interestingly enough, at Ground Floor Theater. But we talked about it. It's such a fun show. But I'm going to let you judge by listening to this interview. You ready to hear it, Bob?
Let's do it.
Here it is. Well, we are fortunate enough here during our membership drive and here in the Zoom room, we have Shrewd Productions and their upcoming show, Lady Macbeth and Her Pal Megan. The reprise, or redux. And here we have the founder and artistic director of Shrewd Productions, Shannon Grounds. Hi, Shannon.
Hello.
It's been a while since I've had you on the show, and I'm so happy to see you back.
Oh, thank you. I'm happy to be back. I'm happy to be doing theater.
Yeah, well, aren't we all? And the quintessential actor here in Austin, Texas, Eva McQuaid. Hi, Eva.
Hello. Thank you. Hello.
I'm always thrilled to have you on the show. I'm always thrilled to have to just be around you in your presence. It's always so positive and energy filled. I just love it.
Thank you. Bless your heart for saying so, but in like the good way.
In the good No, I didn't mean it in the good way. Of course not. So being a boomer as I am and having the foggy memory as I do, I'm not sure whether we had you on the show the first time around.
Mm-hmm.
We did.
I even remember what I wore. But well, that's a whole other conversation.
Me too. Wow. It was a purple dress with a beret. I was called Monica back then. Well, that's great. So this is the reprise. It's an encore performance of Lady Macbeth and Her Pal Megan, which I saw in its original production at the Santa Cruz. Theater, which I find everything about that theater is lovely, and your production was lovely as well. So for those that are not me and don't know about this show, Shannon, what is this show?
What is this show? Well, this show was written by Megan Gogarty, who is a stand-up comedian and playwright, and I believe actually also playwriting professor. And this show is the premise of the show starts with the idea that, you know, Megan thinks she would make a great Lady Macbeth, and her actor friend immediately shoots her down, and it's just like, no way. And really just kind of uses that as a vehicle to talk about what it's like to be a woman in theater, what it's like to be a woman in stand-up comedy in the world. It's just really, I love this play. It's incredibly funny. Of course, Eva is incredibly funny in it. One best leading actress in a comedy. gotta promote that. Yep. But she did. She
true
won.
Story.
True story. And it's just very uplifting, and it's very, you know, she deals with a lot of issues, but at the end, this is just a very, it's a funny, hopeful, raw and real, but just very good time, I think.
Well, yeah, very great description of the show, and well-deserved Bieden Payne Award for Ms. Eva McQuaid, Best Actress 2019? 18?
Yeah. 19.
Well, that's wonderful. So I don't know whether we talked about this in its original incarnation. When we spoke last time on the show, I had not seen the show yet. Now I have. So I'm curious, Eva, how did Shannon approach you to do this role? It's a one-person show, which is challenging just unto itself. Mm-hmm. I can't think of anybody else in town who would be right for this, but I'm just wondering what your reaction was when you were approached.
I can think of some other folks who could play. I mean, it's a great part, and I'm very grateful to do it. And reading it and in doing it, it's very adjacent to my own story, which is frightening, which was also the reaction I had when Shannon asked me to do it. Just fear, anxiety, terror, but also I'll do it. Very exciting. This is a line from the play. But what a challenge to be able to do a solo show. It's been exhilarating. Same stuff, terrifying. My anxiety has ridden the like a roller coaster. It's but so much fun. And very challenging though. I would say it has really pushed me to the extent of what I thought I would do as an actor. I don't know if I ever thought I would do a solo show. So it's been a good challenge.
One of the things, you know, one-person shows are challenging on a lot of levels. Mm-hmm. This one, and I have to say, I have to admit that I'm not a fan of most, I think. Hearing and listening to one voice for 2 hours on stage can be difficult. This is an hour piece. You don't feel it go, and the energy level like is through the roof the whole time. And you are laughing the whole time. Except those times that you're not supposed to laugh. So I am guessing at the once that curtain call is done, you are exhausted.
Yeah. As we started this process again, I mean, just in general, after all of last year, in this year, it's been challenging to get those muscles, which have completely deteriorated over the course of the last year and a half. That has been an extra challenge to it for sure. And I apologize to anybody in advance who comes to see the show or who came to see the show last time we did it. I'm very sweaty at the end. Yes, but it's again a really good opportunity to really maybe regain that ability to be able to have that kind of stamina for that amount of time. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's certainly, in the past 18 months, there's a gearing up process. Shannon, you're directing this piece, and you directed the original. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, the original was at the Santa Cruz Theater Center, which is a small, intimate space. Mm-hmm. And this time you're at Ground Floor Theater, a theater that I have a tangential relationship to. Which is a much bigger space. How are you adapting the direction of this piece to the larger space?
Well, I mean, one advantage of having the larger space is that, of course, we can do socially distanced seating, which is necessary right now, just for safety reasons. But we are going to, with our set and Patrick Anthony, our wonderful lighting designer, who is also our set designer, we are going to be kind of shrinking in that space to make a more intimate setting visually for the audience, while the actual seating will be spread out and they will be, you know, able to be socially distanced. So I think that that's, it's a good thing. And it's, I'm really interested to see what it feels like in this new space.
And are you approaching the piece any differently this time?
You know, it's funny, it's come up in rehearsals that we're just having different emotional reactions to things that we, like things that we had strong emotional reactions to the first time, maybe not so much, but things that maybe we didn't hit us the first time around or hitting us a little bit harder. I know especially there's a moment for Eva, I'll let her speak to it because I think it's very pertinent right now. And I know you know what I'm talking about, Eva. What is hitting you right now?
It was really very, very obvious to me. The difference, and I'm super grateful. I've said this before and I will continue to say it. I'm very grateful for all the opportunities I've received the last year and a half. Most of them have been virtual performances and interactions, which is very different from being on stage, as anybody who's listening to this will know and testify to. It's way different to get a laugh on stage than it is to get, or any reaction really, to being on stage than it is to get a little emoji in like a Zoom or any kind of virtual capacity. And there's a part of the play where she talks about getting a laugh on stage. It's like jumping out of an airplane without a parachute and discovering you have wings. And I was starting to, oh man, even right now, as I started to go through the script again, I was reading it and I started, you know, out loud, and I got to that part and I really just, was so much of this emotion that came over me of sadness and grief for this time that we have had, that we've not been able to get laughs and interaction with audience members, but also joy that we have opportunities to do that still, and that in some point in the future, we will again in its fullest capacity. So.
And that is true. And listeners to this show have heard me say time and time again, there is a huge difference about viewing something online and sitting shoulder to shoulder with other people in an audience and trading the energy with the action on stage. It's amazing. So you're prepared to like give us a little taste of this show, are you not?
Well, I'll give you a little, break you off a piece of it if you want. Yeah.
Break us off a piece of that Lady Macbeth bar.
Okay.
Does it need any kind of setup?
No.
Okay, well, then.
I mean, sure. Shannon, do you want to give some setup?
Here's Megan.
So let's listen to Eva McQuaid and a piece from Shrewd Productions, Lady Macbeth and her pal, Megan.
So the point is, I'm in this slump when I find myself having a conversation with my friend Alexis. Alexis is an actor, and we end up talking about dream roles, you know, parts we would love to play. And I happen to mention casually, just throwing it out there, I think I would make a wonderful Lady Macbeth. And Alexis says,
you can't play Lady Macbeth.
What do you mean I can't play Lady Macbeth? She's a badass. I'm a badass. I could totally play Lady Macbeth.
Lady Macbeth is this sexy seductress.
And?
No, she's this evil, she's carnal.
Oh, you don't think I can be carnal? I can be carnal. I was at a party once in 1998. Carnality happened.
It's not personal. Lady Macbeth is just not your type.
I can't believe I'm hearing this. Of course she's my type. It's so obvious. What do we know about Lady Macbeth? She's evil. She's sexy. She's crazy. That's me.
Megan, Lady Macbeth is a tragic figure of powerful darkness, and you're the human equivalent of a golden retriever.
You don't think I can play Lady Macbeth?
Nobody thinks you can play Lady Macbeth.
Well, I'm shocked. You of all people who are supposed to know me so well can't see that I'm... And this is what happens to women. We get misconstrued. I blame the movies. Don't even get me started on Cruella de Vil. You know what? Too late! Cruella de Vil is the hero of 101 Dalmatians. She has a clearly defined life goal. She wants a fur coat. She doesn't kinda want a fur coat. She doesn't want world peace and a fur coat. She wants a fur coat made from puppies as his, her right. She is a bold, competent woman with a poorly conceived business strategy. Just like Lady Macbeth.
Some Cruella de Vil, indeed. That was great, first of all. And second of all, I actually do have a fur coat made out of Dalmatians.
Oh, wow.
So tell us when this show opens. It's one weekend only. Is that correct?
Yep, just four nights. You have four nights to catch Eva. And that is September 29th through October the 2nd. All shows are at 8 p.m. at Ground Floor Theater. And we will have a live stream option on October 1st and 2nd if you don't feel comfortable going to the theater or, you know, can't be vaccinated.
Yes. Well, that leads me to my next question before I ask for your website. What are the COVID-19 mitigation policies that you have in place for this show?
Gotcha. Well, we are requiring people to bring either proof of vaccination or a recent being like within the last 72 hours, negative COVID test. So if you're not vaccinated, you can bring a negative COVID test. We are requiring audience members to wear masks, and we will have masks, fun masks, for you here if you happen to forget, no problem. We are, as I mentioned earlier, doing socially distanced seating. Seating capacity is limited to 50 for this show, just to be extra safe. And I believe you can tell us about the HEPA filters.
We do have HEPA filtration in the theater, so that's good. And
fancy and wonderful.
They're fancy and wonderful. And the concession stand is closed, and we are not allowing food and drink because the masks need to stay on. So where can folks go to get information about this marvelous show?
Why, they can go to shrewdproductions.org, and that is Shrewd, S-H-R-E-W-D, as in she was cursed and shrewd.
Awesome. Well,
floating curse.
I know folks will enjoy this show, but before we completely sign off, we are here at Co-op doing our membership drive. Y'all love Co-op, don't you?
We do indeed.
Who the hell doesn't?
Yeah, so tell people that they should donate to become a member.
You should donate to become a member. Why is that even a question? You should super donate. I mean, come on, this is entertainment here. You don't want to lose out on this ever in the future. So just get up. You don't even have to get up, I guess. You could just do everything online. You don't have to leave, put on pants, nothing.
Yep. And that's at koop.org or 512-472-5667. Somebody will take your pledge. Shannon and Eva, thank you so much for coming back on Offstage and on the Air.
Thank you for having us.
Quiet, please. There's a lady on stage. She may not be the latest rage, but she's singing. And she means it, and she deserves a little silence.
Quiet, please, there's a lady.
Oh, I knew I did that for you.
That was from Hugh, and it was great. And I loved Eva's. And you don't have to put your pants on to donate.
No, you don't.
Write a KOP.
You don't. Well, I need to stop you because we want to get today in theater history before we run out of time.
What happened today in theater history?
Well, this is something interesting, and you probably remember this, Bob. In 1921, the Music Box Review happened.
Okay.
And I didn't realize that was, and we talk about this theater quite often. Can you guess which theater it played at? Nicole?
The Music Box?
The Music Box! So the Music Box Review was an Irving Berlin. One of the things it played was Irving Berlin's Say It With Music. I was going to play it today, but we don't have time, so we're not going to hear it. In 1964, it was the opening of The Fiddler on the Roof with 10 Mostel. And I know I knew this, but I was surprised to read again. B. Arthur played Yenta. And
I were a rich man.
Yadiga bida ziga diga liga laga diga dum.
My brother has been singing Tradition all week, and I was dancing it on the streets the other day.
Dancing in the streets. Okay, we got to get moving. 1966, A Delicate Balance by Edward Albee was Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy, the famous pair. And the final thing we'll talk about today was in 1998, Terrence McNally's Corpus Christi began previews. And it was the most controversial and talked about play of the season. It was done at Manhattan Theater Club. And this is they had lots of threats of violence because it depicts a gay Christ-like figure. And I know that when City Theater here in town did it, they had a lot of problems with threats of violence and stuff as well. But so that started previews and nothing happened in New York. They didn't no big whoop, as it turns out. So, very quickly, just to have time for the telephone number and the email address or whatever that thing is called.
512-472-5667. Call now. If you don't like to talk, koop.org. Donate button.
Do it. You've spent an hour with us. Please be a member of Co-op, 512-472-5667. Nicole, thank you. I don't think we're going to have you next week, so we'll miss you.
Co-op on, y'all.
So just in keeping with our time of Jagged Little Pill and thanking people, we're going to play, as we leave, a song called Thank You from a show called Jagged Little Pill. So there you go. But I almost played the Scrooge Thank You accidentally. Here's Jagged Little Pill. We'll see y'all next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Bye. How about me now?